Chapter 16. Kevin Stoner didn't find the man he was looking for, so he made his way back to the station. He had a mountain of paperwork to tie up before the move to CID, and Alan was working late tonight. After a couple of hours, Alan called.
"How's it going?" Kevin asked.
"Busy night." Alan was a senior radiographer who, until he met Kevin, had been perfectly happy to work nights. "How things change?"
"Pretty steady, which is good. It makes the time go quicker. Miss you, babe. Miss you too. And if it's any consolation, I'm working as well."
They chatted for a while until Alan was called away. Kevin put his phone on the desk beside him and pulled the last report towards him. Just as he was about to close the file, his phone beeped. Kevin smiled. Alan must be really missing him tonight. He stared at the message on the screen. "Kev, can you meet me? I have something for you, and it's big. Please don't tell anyone or bring anyone. Half an hour at the place Barney died. William." It's big. But what William was asking of him was a big thing, too. A directive had gone out to all personnel ordering that while the shooter remained at large, they were not to go out on the streets alone and must always inform control of their whereabouts. By going to the meeting, Kevin would be breaking the rules big time. But if he didn't go, or even if he took a mate, he wouldn't get the info William had for him. Kevin put his jacket on, closed his computer and left the office. No moon tonight. The waste ground was in darkness. He'd walked past earlier today and the place had been deserted. No kids, no bikes, no skateboards and no street dwellers. Following Barney's death, this piece of ground had become truly desolate. A movement. A black cat slunk out from a pile of debris, stared at him for a moment, then sloped off. Kevin began to feel distinctly nervous. He picked his way over to the old storehouse. He was about 200 meters away when the headlights of a car suddenly illuminated the front of the old building. Kevin stood, caught in the light and frozen in place like a rabbit. After a few moments, his heart stopped racing and his vision cleared. A strange scene unfolded, dreamlike, before his eyes. An old fence post, maybe 6 foot high, a leftover from an earlier fenced-off area belonging to the railway. A figure tied to it, wrists and feet secured with thick rope and a white hood over its head. Kevin started forward.
"Stay where you are! Move and he dies!"
A trap. What an idiot he'd been. He saw the figure moving, trying to get free of its bonds, but there was nothing he could do.
"What do you want?" he shouted. "I have a message for D.I. Jackman," the voice called back.
Kevin swallowed.
"Tell him not to get sidetracked with his old adversary, because I'm just as dangerous, believe me."
Kevin went cold.
"And in case you don't, here's the proof."
The crack of a rifle shot, and the man tied to the post slumped forward, held in place by the ropes. In the glare of the headlights, Kevin saw a dark stain spread across the white hood. He dashed forward, filled with a terrible foreboding and careless of his own life. He stopped in front of the still figure. Slowly he raised a shaking hand and removed the hood.
"William! Oh no! Not you, my friend!"
He turned and screamed into the black.
"You bastard! I'll see you in hell for this!"
The lights went out. The waste ground was plunged into darkness, and Kevin heard laughter, followed by an engine starting up, revving and driving away.
"You bastard!"
This time it came out as a sob. He gently touched the side of William's neck, though he knew his friend had gone. Slowly he pulled out his phone and rang the station. Levi Lorimer looked steadily at Marie, who returned his gaze. Levi was the first to look away. Nevertheless, he made her feel uneasy. The others were oddballs, but at least also open books. Levi's blank expression gave nothing away. She pictured him heaving whole carcasses of meat up onto his muscular shoulders, those small narrow eyes registering nothing. She had engineered it so as to speak with Levi alone. For one thing, she didn't want Rachel hearing what she had to say, and another, Levi was now, nominally, the head of the household. Everyone knew that Rachel was the real power in the family, but Levi was a man.
"Your brothers, Noah and Jacob, could be in serious trouble, Levi. Did you know what they were up to?"
Levi shook his head, still impassive.
"We might all live here, but we have our own lives. I have no idea what you're talking about."
"Theft, Levi.
And if a certain horse breeder chooses to press charges, they'll probably be arrested. Now," she intensified her stare,
"I wonder how your mother will feel about that."
An expression flickered for a moment, although Marie couldn't tell what it meant.
"Idiots. Morons, the pair of them. They've never done anything this stupid before."
The eyes hardened.
"You've got proof it was my brothers."
"We have confessions, plus the stolen goods, which are right here on the farm."
"Nah, we'll kill 'em." He spoke through gritted teeth. "If I don't get to them first."
"Before you do that, Levi, it seems your cousin Ezra lied to them in order to get them to commit these crimes."
Now the expression was easy to read. Utter bewilderment.
"Ezra? Why?"
"When he gets home, we'll ask him."
Marie stood up. Towering over her, Levi took hold of her arm.
"Please, Sergeant Evans, don't tell Mar until you know what's going on. She'll..."
He didn't finish the sentence. He released his grip.
"This is terrible for the family. We have to sort it ourselves. My brothers are fools, but they're not bad. If Ezra has corrupted them, I'll wring his damned neck."
"I suggest you leave the punishment side of it to us, Levi. We can do it legally. I'd hate to have to cart you away in handcuffs."
Her opinion of him had shifted slightly. Maybe he really did have no idea what was going on. Who knew? He would make a bloody good poker player.
"Is Paul home yet?"
"I saw his car drive in a few minutes ago."
He hesitated, grunted.
"Look, Paul is, well, he's unpredictable. Flares up without warning, if you know what I mean. Tread carefully with him. He has no respect for the law, nor people either."
Marie shrugged.
"I've been told he's volatile."
"Ma says he lacks social graces, whatever that means."
"Thanks for the warning. I'd better go and see him now."
Out in the hall, she found Charlie Button in animated conversation with Paul Lorimer. They were talking about engines. Charlie introduced her, and Paul stuck out a hand.
"Paul Lorimer, hello."
She took the proffered hand.
"Pleased to meet you, Paul."
Could this lad be the skinny little git that she had chased down her road? She looked again. Maybe not. He had to be older than that one. Still.
"Why are the police here?"
asked Paul.
"Let's talk out of your ma's earshot, shall we?"
She ushered him out through the front door.
"Noah and Jacob are in trouble, Paul. Do you know why?"
He looked both suspicious and concerned.
"No, I don't."
She told him briefly what had happened. When she mentioned Ezra, he erupted. Torrent of words poured from him like lava.
"You can't accuse Uncle Ezra. He hasn't done anything. He loves this family. He'd do anything for us. He's our rock now Dad's gone. I want him to stay here forever. You mustn't upset him. I don't want him to go because of you. Why don't you just piss off and leave us alone?"
"Hey."
Charlie touched Paul's shoulder.
"No one is sending him away. We just need to hear his version of why certain things have happened, that's all. Then we can sort it all out and be on our way. Simple."
Marie looked at Charlie with new respect. She hadn't known he could be so understanding. His calming voice seemed to do the trick, and Paul's sudden burst of rage dissipated almost as quickly as it had begun. Marie decided to back off and allow him to turn the conversation back to engines. Charlie knew what she needed to get from Paul, and she was sure he'd do his best to elicit some answers. She left the house and went to look for Robbie. It was completely dark now, and she wanted to finish up here and get away.
"I've checked the pig's ear tags, not that I needed to, as Jacob has told me exactly where they came from. Poor little sod, he thought he was helping the animals."
Robbie's eyes grew hard.
Couldn't you cheerfully swing for people who manipulate the vulnerable?
Couldn't I just?
Marie growled.
And where the bloody hell is Ezra?
Dunno about him, but I think Bullymore is here to collect Nimbus.
Robbie pointed to a big horse box that was carefully negotiating the bridge over the dike.
Right, let's tell him to go easy on Jacob.
Robbie too looked apprehensive.
Let's hope he's so pleased to get his nag back that he doesn't look any further. It's not Jacob's fault he was hoodwinked.
They hurried over to where the vehicle was parked up. Marie turned a big smile on Clay Bullymore.
He's safe, sir, and he's been very well looked after. When I think of what kind of outcome we could have had, it's a massive relief.
Clay Bullymore was a tall, well-built man, his fair hair just greying at the temples. He was dressed in a similar style to Jackman's mother, cord trousers, check shirt, and a barber gilet with a dozen pockets.
Jackman called. He didn't give me the full story, said you'd fill me in. The main thing is Nimbus is safe.
He looked around.
What a dump. I'd really like to know how he finished up here, but I need to see my horse first.
He looked inquiringly at Marie.
I'll tell you everything, sir, but as you say, let's start with Nimbus.
She hesitated.
There's something you need to know, and then I'm going to ask something rather odd of you.
She quickly explained Jacob's limitations and his extraordinary talent with horses. Looking rather taken aback at her request, Bullymore said,
I'll see for myself, D.S. Evans, before I commit to anything.
Fair enough, but I think you'll be surprised, Marie said.
When they opened the barn door, they saw, in the light of a single bulb, Jacob gently brushing the big horse's mane and talking to it like an old and trusted friend. For a long moment, Bullymore stood and watched. Marie glanced at his face and knew that they had nothing to worry about.
Jacob, Marie said gently, this is Mr. Bullymore. He's come to take Nimbus home.
Both the horse and groom looked up. Neither moved.
Nimbus! Here, boy!
The horse gave a soft snuffle of greeting, but stayed beside Jacob.
Well, there's a nice welcome.
Bullymore turned to Marie.
He's usually an excitable boy. They haven't drugged him, have they?
No, sir, you can check. He's just contented, I promise you.
Robbie stood behind them. Bullymore went over to his horse and patted him, then addressed Jacob.
You really have a way with him, lad.
He's special,
said Jacob quietly.
That he is. Have you ridden him?
Yes, sir.
And he handles beautifully. He's the best horse I've ever seen.
Marie nudged Robbie and nodded towards the door.
Let's leave them to it for a while.
Robbie grinned.
All's well that ends well.
Let's not count our chickens, Robbie, or our pigs either.
I'm pretty sure that Bullymore won't take this further, but the Lorimers are mercurial. They can change in the blink of an eye. Think of Paul. I'll only be really happy when I see that Nimbus is on his way home. She stared down the lane, hoping to see the headlights announcing the arrival of Ezra, but there was only darkness. Her phone rang. She listened to what Jackman had to say, and the colour drained from her face. She ended the call and turned to Robbie.
I have to go. Can you take over here? There's been another shooting, and Kevin Stoner was there again. He saw it happen. Oh, my God, that poor guy. Who was shot?
His snout, William.
Marie shivered.
A car with a crew of uniforms has been dispatched to help you and Charlie and to get you home again. Can you manage everything? And Ezra, if he finally materializes?
Don't worry, Sarge. And Ezra will be all mine if he turns up. I'll make sure of that.
You'll not knock seven bells out of him, will you?
He gave her a faint smile.
I'll try.
Keep me up to speed, Robbie.
Will do. Just watch those fen lanes in the dark, won't you?
Actually, Marie loved driving at night, heading to nowhere along those long dark roads. Of course, it was far more exhilarating on her motorbike, but a car was good enough.
I'll be careful, and you look out for yourselves.